ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। सो रीडिंग फ्रॉम द 10th कैंटो चैप्टर 3 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड द बर्थ ऑफ लॉर्ड कृष्णा टेक्स्ट नंबर 33 युवां वै ब्रह्मणादिष्टवो प्रजा सर्गे यदा ततः शनियं येन्द्रियाग्रामम् ते पाते परमं तपः। Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: when both of you were ordered by Lord Brahma to create progeny, you first underwent severe austerities by controlling your senses. Purport: here is an instruction about how to use one's senses to create progeny. According to Vedic principles, before creating progeny, one must fully control the senses. This control takes place through the Garbhadhan Samskara. In India, there is great agitation for birth control in various mechanical ways, but birth cannot be mechanically controlled. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 13.9, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi Dukkha Doshanudarshanam. Birth, death, old age and disease are certainly the primary distresses of the material world. People are trying to control birth, but they are not able to control death. And if one cannot control death, one cannot control birth either. In other words, artificially controlling birth is not any more feasible than artificially controlling death. According to Vedic civilization, procreation should not be contrary to religious principles, and then the birth rate will be controlled. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7.11, Dharma viruddho bhuteshu kamosmi. Sex not contrary to religious principles is a representation of the Supreme Lord. People should be educated in how to give birth to good children through samskaras, beginning with the Garbhadhan samskara. Birth should not be controlled by artificial means, for this will lead to a civilization of animals. If one follows religious principles, he automatically practices birth control. Because if one is spiritually educated, he knows that the after effects of sex are various types of misery. Bahu dukkha bhaja. One who is spiritually advanced does not indulge in uncontrolled sex. Therefore, instead of being forced to refrain from sex or refrain from giving birth to many children, people should be spiritually educated, and then birth control will automatically follow. If one is determined to make spiritual advancement, he will not beget a child unless able to make the child a devotee. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.18, Pita na sashyat. One should not become a father unless one is able to protect his child from mrityu, the path of birth and death. But where is there education about this? A responsible father never begets children like cats and dogs. Instead of being encouraged to adopt artificial means of birth control, people should be educated in Krishna consciousness, because only then will they understand their responsibility to their children. If one can beget children who will be devotees and be taught to turn aside from the path of birth and death, mrityu samsara vartmani, there is no need of birth control. Rather, one should be encouraged to beget children. Artificial means of birth control have no value. Whether one begets children or does not, a population of men who are like cats and dogs will never make human society happy. It's therefore necessary for people to be educated spiritually, so that instead of begetting children like cats and dogs, they will undergo austerities to produce devotees. This will make their lives successful. Hare Krishna. Very powerful purport of Srila Prabhupada. And it's really amazing how that these purports were written at the time when Srila Prabhupada was actually practically about to leave his body, right? So we are in the 10th canto now, and Srila Prabhupada this time was in Vrindavan in very, very bad health and practically not taking any food or not taking even any liquids. But yet we see that his purports have been completely condensed with so much of nectar, so much of valuable instructions for all of us. So I thought that, you know, since this purport itself is such that I would not be able to contribute through any realization, the best path is to take the path of speaking what the acharyas have spoken, as that would be the safest path. So we were listening to a class of Devanand Swami in Vrindavan, where Maharaj was talking about, on the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, this pastime of King Prachinibharishat and Narad Muni, the conversation between them, and how Narad Muni is narrating the story, allegorical story of this king called Puranjan. And Maharaj was explaining how it is that today the society is so corrupted that it is practically impossible for a man and a woman to remain together. There is so much of external contamination that is affecting both the man and the woman. So how can one control that one's senses? And Maharaj was giving this example of how it was that there was this devotee couple in New Zealand who were his disciples, and one day they came to him with a very peculiar problem. They approached him and told him that Maharaj's daughter, she was just 8 years old at that time, she comes home and then she is asking us, why are you remaining married? When the daughter is coming and asking the parents, why are you remaining married? All my classmates, none of their parents are remaining married. And it is so much of fun that one weekend they can spend with one person, the second weekend they can spend with another person. And for me, it's such a monotony to keep coming to the same house every day where I see both of you together. So why don't you get separated? You know, so Devamrita Swami was saying that this is the nature of Kali Yuga. You know, where an 8-year-old girl, I mean, she's innocent, but yet she's so impressionable that she comes and tells her parents that, you know, why don't you separate? You know, so remaining married together in this age, at this present time, is considered to be a great obstacle in somebody's happiness. Right? This young girl is actually very unhappy because she is seeing that both the parents are married or staying together. What to talk about? I mean, we can just go back in flashback 50 years or maybe even 40 years back. You know, where for a person to be separated from his wife was considered to be completely unacceptable in society, particularly in India. Of course, the West had already become corrupted by that time, but if you see in the Indian context, I remember when I was about 8 or 9 years of age, there was one particular couple who not even divorced, they just remained separate, you know, because they just could not get along together. So the husband and wife, they decided that they would live separately, but still for the sake of children, they did not get divorced. And that was considered by the whole of society, at least in our community, it was considered to be a great aparad, as if this couple had committed something, you know, so such a big sin that they are staying separately. The children would alternate between the father and the mother. And this was just 40 years back. But today, we see, like yesterday I was reading an article in the newspaper, and it is completely unbelievable that marriages nowadays are taking place just for a few months. You know, like we all are familiar with the statistic that in the US, you know, 70% of marriages do not last more than 3 years. right? But this has now become history. Now one should say that 70% of the marriages don't last for more than 6 months. And yesterday, in fact, in this particular newspaper, there was this article of so many personalities. In fact, there was one couple who were married only for 2 days. Can you believe it? I mean, these are personalities who are extremely prominent in society. Very, very highly paid actors in the film industry. And when she is asked, why did you marry? I mean, if you wanted to remain married for 2 days, why did you get married in the first place? And she said, I just wanted to experience marriage. You know, she wanted to experience how it was to get married. Because so many relationships she already had before actually getting married to this person. And then she found that, oh my God, now I'm married. It's better to be separate. Huh? So this is the state of society today. And the reason for this is primarily because a woman wants to become independent. The scriptures enjoin that a woman doesn't have any role to play whereby she is independent. She's always dependent, right from the time she is born, in fact from the time she is conceived till the time she is, her body is taken to the cremation ground, she is expected to be protected. Right? From the time she is born up to the time that she gets married, she is protected by her father and by her mother. And then after that, the father hands her over to the husband, and the husband is supposed to take care of her till the time he is either leaves his body or then takes the sannyas ashram. And then he hands her over to the sons, and then the sons take care of her till the end of her life. So there was no situation where a woman could become independent. So she was always dependent on her husband. And we have this very wonderful anecdote just about 60, 70 years back of this great personality, Mahatma Gandhi. A very illustrative example of how a woman wants to show that she is dependent on her husband. Right? So here was a situation where the husband and wife, Mahatma Gandhi and his wife, had a very big argument. And it was so intense that Gandhiji told his wife to leave the house and to go back wherever she wants. I'm not going to take any more responsibility for you. So this poor woman, she was kicked out of the house, and Gandhiji slammed the door on her face and went inside. And this was sometime in the evening. Next day morning, when Gandhiji opened the door, he found that his wife was still there. I mean, she was sitting outside. So he asked her, you know, I told you to leave this house. Why are you staying over here? And then she said, where will I go? Where can I go? I don't have anywhere to go. You are the one who is taking care of me. And you are the only person whom I am dependent upon. So I don't have any place to go. And then immediately Mahatma Gandhi realized, yes, what she is saying is absolutely right. And that's the reason why we find that a husband and a wife, through all the upturns and downturns of life, they stay together. Because where there's an understanding that the woman is completely dependent on her husband and she serves the husband to the best of her capacity, then why should the man look elsewhere for enjoyment? And in fact, the whole purpose of this Vedic system of marriage is so arranged that, of course, in the initial years of marriage, maybe there is an attraction between the man and the woman. But later on, because they are staying together, there is so much of familiarity between the husband and wife that there is no more attraction between them sexually. So gradually, by the time, you know, they come to the age of 50 odd years, this attraction between the husband and wife has already gone down to such an extent that, you know, they are actually naturally controlling their senses. Just like how we experience when we come to Krishna consciousness in the beginning days, I mean, there are so many bad habits that we have. You know, some of us, at least particularly for me, I mean, it was very difficult to get over these bad habits under normal circumstances. But then when we came into Krishna consciousness and we came into the association of devotees, and we were seeing how devotees were so easily able to control all these habits, then it becomes natural for us to also give it up. So similarly, husband and wife, they stay together for so many years, there's so much of familiarity that, you know, this basic, this attraction between them from a sex point of view is diminished. But in today's society, what we see is that when this attraction is diminished, at that time the man and the woman want to experience some further enjoyment. So that's the reason why they divorce, and then the man goes to somebody else and the wife goes to somebody else, and you know, they think that we are going to be now enjoying as we were enjoying maybe 10, 15, 20 years back. Not realizing that this is a very famous saying, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. Right? So if you're not able to control the senses as we advance in our age, we find that our mind is giving us so much of difficulty. Right? Our body may not be able to cooperate. The body cannot, you know, once you become 60, 70 years of age, where even the body doesn't have the ability to enjoy itself anymore, or in a very limited way. But yet the mind, because it is not controlled through the pages of the scriptures, by reading it, we understand the dire necessity to be controlling our mind and then our senses at an early stage of our life. We find that person, although he may be physically unable to be enjoying, still he's in so much of anxiety and is in so much of mental, you know, his whole intention is to somehow or the other try and enjoy the senses, and he works so hard in order to enable himself to do that. So Srimad Bhagavatam, fortunately for us, has given us the way by which, through the example of so many personalities, we are able to see how one can go through the entire stage of life, right from brahmacharya to grahastha to vanaprastha to sannyas, in such a way that towards the end of life we are actually able to remember Krishna. And one very striking personality who comes to my mind in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam, who exemplified this particular aspect of controlling his senses, was Kardava Muni. And you see in this conversation between Maitreya Rishi and Vidura, I just would refer to this conversation because I don't want to paraphrase Srila Prabhupada's purports, but it is so revealing. In the 21st chapter, Vidura is asking Maitreya Rishi, "The line of Swayambhuva Manu was most esteemed, O worshipful sage. I beg you, give me an account of this race whose progeny multiplied through sexual intercourse." And Srila Prabhupada gives very beautiful purport here, saying that regulated sex life to generate good population is worth accepting. Actually, Vidura was not interested in hearing the history of persons who merely engaged in sex life. But he was interested in the progeny of Swayambhuva Manu, because in that dynasty, good devotee kings appeared who protected their subjects very carefully with spiritual knowledge. By hearing the history of their activities, therefore, one becomes more enlightened. And then further on, Vidura is asking, how many offspring did the great yogi beget through the princess who was endowed with eightfold perfection in the yoga principles? Oh, pray tell me this, for I am eager to hear it. And in this purport, Srila Prabhupada says that because the husband and wife, both of them were greatly advanced in Krishna consciousness, this was an ideal match. The husband and wife, Kardama and Devahuti, were advanced in yoga practice. The husband was a Mahayogi, great mystic, and the wife was a Yoga Lakshana, or one advanced in yoga. They united and produced children. Formerly, after making their lives perfect, great sages and saintly persons used to beget children, otherwise they strictly observed the rules and regulations of celibacy. Brahmacharya is required for perfection of self-realization and mystic power. There is no recommendation in the Vedic scriptures that one can go on enjoying material sense gratification at one's whims as one likes and at the same time become a great meditator by paying a rascal some money. And then here we have therefore, desiring to marry a girl of like disposition who may prove to be a veritable cow of plenty in this married life to satisfy my lustful desire, of course he was not lusty, I too have sought the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the source of everything, for you are like a desired tree. So this is Kardama Muni who is praying. And Srila Prabhupada says over here that Kardama Muni wanted to have a wife of like disposition, because a wife is necessary to assist in spiritual and material advancement. It is said that the wife yields the fulfillment of all desires in religion, economic development and sense gratification. If one has a nice wife, he is to be considered a most fortunate man. In astrology, a man is considered fortunate who has great wealth, very good sons or a very good wife. Of these three, one who has a very good wife is considered the most fortunate. Before marrying, one should select a wife of like disposition and not be enamored by so-called beauty or other attractive features for sense gratification. So, like disposition. And one last point is about children. So Kardama Muni desired to beget a child who would be the ray of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should beget a child who can perform the duties of Vishnu, otherwise there is no need to produce children. There are two kinds of children born of good fathers. One is educated in Krishna consciousness so that he can be delivered from the clutches of Maya in that very life. And the other is a ray of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and teaches the world the ultimate goal of life. As will be described in later chapters, Kardama Muni begot such a child, Kapila, the incarnation of the personality of Godhead, who enunciated the philosophy of Sankhya. Great householders pray to God to send his representatives so that there may be an auspicious movement in human society. This is one reason to beget a child. Srila Prabhupada says, there's also one more reason. Another reason is that a highly enlightened parent can train a child in Krishna consciousness so that the child will not have to come back again into this miserable world. Parents should see to it that the child born of them does not enter the womb of a mother again. Unless one can train a child for liberation in that life, there is no need to marry or produce children. And Srila Prabhupada concludes his purport by saying that by his prayers to the Lord, he had as his child Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He is talking about Bhakti Vinod Thakur. By his prayers to the Lord, he had as his child Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, who at the present moment is preaching the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya throughout the entire world through his bona fide disciples. So this is the standard that Srila Prabhupada is expecting from a man and a woman who combines together for the purpose of marriage. The purpose of marriage should be primarily to beget a child who will be able to first deliver humanity from the cycle of birth and death, but at the same time also help in delivering both the parents as well as himself from the cycle of birth and death. So there was this beautiful class of Badrinarayan Prabhu in Vrindavan. And Prabhuji was explaining how it is that one of the most important aspects for us to, particularly in ISKCON, we have got the facility to be able to control our senses by the process of hearing. Because this process of hearing is so powerful that this is the last thing that the body actually gives up at the time of death. in this beautiful book that has been written by Srila Prabhupada's disciple on this art of dying, which is also a process that all of us have to go through, how important it is for us to focus on this particular aspect of hearing. And he was giving this very nice example of a very wealthy person in the US who had met with an accident and had landed in a coma. And the doctors practically had given up hope that he was ever going to be recovering. So it so happened that this person was lying on the bed in the hospital room, and the doctors had already given up hope, and this the sons, they were talking about, you know, we don't know where he has kept his insurance policies, and you know, we don't know how much money he has got in the bank, and you know, we have to get all these things together, and you know, so that, you know, as fast as possible we are able to distribute it among ourselves. And the wife, he was able to, you know, she was discussing about how, you know, that we now have to contact a lawyer so that, you know, the final will or whatever is there, any document is there that has been kept with the lawyer. But the nurse who was standing over there, she was repeatedly telling the family members, no, don't worry, you know, I have seen cases like this, several cases, you know, they have recovered, you know, they have come back from such a deep coma also, so don't be in a hurry, you know. So after some time, after a few weeks, this person came out of the coma. And the first thing that he did was that he disinherited his sons, he divorced his wife, and he married the nurse. This, you know, all this discussion that is going on, he's able to hear. I mean, he was in such a deep coma where all the doctors had said that practically there is no hope for him to be coming back. But he was able to hear how his sons are already discussing about where are his insurance policies and where is the money in the bank and so on and so forth. And you can imagine what sort of a trauma that person must be going through. Right? His near and dear ones are waiting for him to die. Right? So, Srimad Bhagavatam, through the dialogue between Kapila Muni and Devahuti, very graphically, you know, narrates how the man and the how a man who is on his deathbed, surrounded by all his family members, and they are all crying out, saying that, you know, please don't leave us. One cannot really imagine what is the trauma that person is undergoing. And this beautiful book, this Mataji is describing how this person who is on the verge of death actually doesn't want any of such things to, you know, to be happening in his presence. He doesn't want people to be crying. In fact, he wants very positive words to be spoken. And how it is so much necessary that everybody goes over there and tells him that, yes, it's now time for you to depart, so please don't have any anxiety. You know, one has to really set the dying person's heart at rest so that he can depart in a very Krishna conscious way, rather than burdening him with all this, so much of anxieties. First of all, he doesn't want to leave, right? Nobody wants to leave this material body. They become so much attached to it. Nobody wants to leave. But yet, he is put into further trauma because there is so much of, you know, people who are crying and wailing, and, you know, he feels that intense attachment towards them. So this process of hearing, if we focus on that at the time when we are, you know, practicing our Krishna consciousness, then we are able to, you know, ensure that we can focus more and more on the actual process of leaving our body and focus on our connection with Krishna. So this is the point that Badinarayan Prabhu was trying to make. So I think we'll stop over here. If anybody has any comments or questions, we can. Jai Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki.